Yeah, talking about eufy.com. The Eufy video lock is unbelievable. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it at Best Buy stores starting on May 20th. What is it? It's a smart lock, 2K cam, and doorbell, 3-in-1, triple security, so you can have everything you need in one device rather than install many pieces on your front door. It's not just for security, but also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys like my wife. You can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated camera. It's easy to install and set up with just a Phillips head screwdriver, no drilling required. It's got a keyless entry. No more fumbling for the keys. When hands are full, never worry about kids losing keys or passing among the renters of your house. You got a rental property out there, this is a must-have. I love this product. Just got it a couple weeks ago. Huge fan. Have the Ring camera. It's okay. It's not as great as this, so I swapped it out. Go to Eufy Video Lock today on YouTube. That's EUFY Video Lock, or visit EUFYOfficial.com/video lock to see how you can gain complete control of your front door.
Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
Life on the front lines requires you to step up your game. Owned and operated by former Navy SEAL Sean Mattson, CardoMax has designed just the right supplements for you and is offering Drinking Bros an exclusive offer. Buy one, get one free off your first order. Go to CardoMax.com. Use the promo code DB. That's CardoMax.com, helping you achieve your max.
Welcome to Drinking Bros, kids. Today, we've got one of those topics that has been emailed to us thousands and thousands and thousands of times. What do we do about health insurance and all these health insurance payments? Why aren't they the same? Why aren't people upfront and honest about it? Today's guest can answer most of those questions for you. It is Marshall Allen. Wrote the book Never Pay the First Bill and Other Ways to Fight the Healthcare System and Win. You're also a Pulitzer Prize finalist, Marshall. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me here.
You didn't win though, right?
I didn't win. It's like, you know, the real bummer with being a Pulitzer finalist, which I've actually been twice, is that they announce the winner and the finalists on the same day. And so even though you're one of three finalists, you feel like you've lost because you realize at the same time they call you a finalist that you didn't win. It's really like, it's a strange sense of elation and disappointment at the same time.
You're happy and you're sad. Do you at least have an hour in between?
So you don't know. No. You don't know that you're a finalist until you find out that you've lost.
Yeah, with all the other journalism prizes, and there are a lot of journalism prizes. You guys probably know journalists like to give themselves awards. usually, they'll announce the finalists, and then they give a few weeks so you can kind of bask in the hope and the glory of being a finalist. And then they announce the winner, and then you're disappointed if you didn't win. But with the Pulitzers, it's unique. They announce the finalists. There's three finalists, and there's a winner, or there's two finalists and a winner. And you find that out at the exact same time. And so inevitably, it's like disappointing to find out you're a finalist, even though you're one of the three top ones, you know?
I kind of feel like this is the awards show that Michael Scott used to put on all the time.
Yeah.
Right? The Dundies Awards.
Yeah. The old Dundies. Because, I mean, look, at least with, like, the Grammys or the Oscars or...
Like, you know your top Globes. 5 months in advance.
Yeah,
you know. You can campaign and make a case. I mean, for Pulitzer Prize, it makes even more sense than films because there is the general reception of the work you did, whatever it is, whatever journalistic piece that you did, whether it's a book or an article or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you have the opportunity for several months to defend, here's why I think it should win against this book or this article or whatever. Yeah. That makes sense to me. And it would also make really good content and conversation.
Yeah.
Right.
So why the fuck is that not the case?
I would appreciate anything you and your audience can do to advocate to the Pulitzer board for a change in this, because I think a lot of journalists who have been finalists but not winners, you know, we'd appreciate it. I mean, we're a
All of our listeners are very, very attuned to the Pulitzer Prize nominations.
Yeah, it's run by Dave Pulitzer.
Very close. Yeah.
Dave Pulitzer puts this on, and you know, we'll dox him if he doesn't give you the award. How about that,
Ricky? Yep. Ricky
Stevens. Pulitzer, Esquire.
Big fan of his work.
And he's an attorney, so you know he's, you know.
Exactly.
He can help you out on the back end, too.
Marshall, let me ask you this. Were you fucked over or your family? Is that what started this journey for you to write something like this? Because one would have to think, with all of us who've gone through this, and like, dude, us included, you get so angry at a certain point, you want to do something. There's nothing you can really do. And then you usually end up fighting with a creditor. They don't give a shit. It's somebody at a desk in the middle of Maryland. They hear thousands and thousands of these calls a day.
Their job is to say, I understand, but never actually help you.
Correct.
That's right. That's correct. So I would say that every working American is getting totally screwed, whether they know it or not. I'm not unique in any way. Like, I've been overpaying for all these years, just like everyone else has. But my family's actually been fairly healthy. So It wasn't some personal experience that I had that led me to write this book. It really came out of 15 years of investigating the healthcare industry as a journalist, doing these deep dive investigative stories, talking to real people on the front lines. Like, every story I ever wrote was from the perspective of the patient who has to navigate the nightmare of our healthcare system, whether they're getting whether they're being forced to overpay financially to the point they can't afford it, or I've done lots of work on patient safety issues where not only does someone suffer a medical error, but then they get billed for it. So there are so many outrages and injustices in our healthcare system, and I get so many calls and emails from patients that's really what motivated me to write the book.
Well, it's a huge issue. We were talking before the show started about the enormity, immensity, whatever you want to call it, of this particular issue. And this is something that I brought up on this particular show and on American Party quite a bit over the last 2 years, which is that our healthcare system is broken for everyone, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And 83% of all bankruptcies filed in America by private citizens are filed because of unpaid medical expenses. Mm-hmm. 83% of the reason we're having to offset debt, right, that affects people's credit for 7 years.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Chapter 7 or 13 or whatever, bankruptcy, is because of how poorly managed the system is. And it's almost reflective of the tax system, right? If you're of a certain class and able to afford a certain level of professional, you can avoid a lot of this shit. But for most people, it is too inscrutable. The system is too inscrutable to be able to figure out even how it works in the first place, much less how to take advantage of the system itself.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Which is hopefully what we're going to do. So tell me about the book and what the content is.
One thing I like to point out is that we need to stop saying that our healthcare system is broken, and we need to start saying that it was made this way.
Correct.
And it was made this way by the very powerful corporations and stakeholders who are acquiring a ton of wealth on the backs of taxpayers and working Americans. This has been going on for so long that we can't just say it's an accident anymore. We can't just say it's complicated. People can't figure it out. No, they can figure it out. They don't want to figure it out. Let's just start with the prices, right? We can't even get a price at a hospital or from a doctor's office before we get a medical procedure or test or treatment. And those prices are hidden for a reason. They're hidden so that the industry can cause some patients to pay way more than others, just because they're basically getting tricked by not seeing the prices up front. And if that's a price that you can't afford, then they say their solution to that is not to give you a fair price. It's to put you on a payment plan. And of course, if you can't afford the payment plan, then you get sent to collections, just like you said, yep, which results in medical debt, which leads to all the bankruptcies we have. I mean, there was a JAMA, Journal of the American Medical Association, study that came out last week that showed $140 billion of medical debt is what's being carried right now by Americans. And that's medical debt that's in collections right now. So about one out of every five Americans has medical debt in collections. And the other super important piece of context here that again, it makes it even more outrageous, is that we spend about 2 times as much per person on healthcare in the United States compared to the citizens of any other country. So the problem isn't that we're somehow underfunding the healthcare system. We're paying twice as much as people in other developed countries. And yet we still have 30 million people uninsured. 1 in 5 people has medical debt in collections. I mean, this is truly a travesty. And so in the book, I really am pointing out, okay, folks, nobody's coming to our rescue. So here's what employers and working Americans can do to fight the system and win. And by win, I mean, if you look at the data, we should be able to spend a lot less than we're paying now and get a lot more for our money. So,
right.
So that's really what I'm showing in the book and what I'm advocating for in the book.
Well, there's so many hard line positions on both sides of this argument. The left has advocated for single payer healthcare for years. The right is animated that they would prefer it be private because then the doctors and other performers get paid for their excellent service, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Neither one of these people is necessarily wrong in principle, but what you said is absolutely true. The amount of service that we get for the amount we're spending is not commensurate.
Right.
And it's not really doctor salaries that are causing the problem. It's the same thing with the college system with inflated administrative costs. But
that's
then
right.
Big pharmaceutical and medical devices, that's where the real money is, right?
Yes.
I mean, we're going to spend, globally, we're going to spend about $160 billion just on COVID vaccines in the next 5 years, right?
Yep.
COVID vaccines that have proven to be, you know, the science is still rudimentary on this because it's a novel virus. It's going to take some time for us to figure out which ones work the best, how many boosters are going to need to be, and blah, 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 and who even needs it, right?
Yeah.
So already we've committed that amount of money to this where, and we have, like he said, 20% of the country right now, 20% of Americans have medical bills in collections.
Yeah.
Not they owe medical bills. They are now to the point of collections.
Yeah.
That's right. Fucked up.
Yeah. And I'll go ahead and speak for myself on this one. We just purchased a truck for the company. And they said, hey, we need you to guarantee it on your own, along with a 50-50 split of the company. Fine, whatever. Once they brought up my credit, it was shit. And like, I just bought a house, you know, relatively in the last year. And I was like, man, my credit was perfect. I don't understand what happened. They were like, can you just bring it up real quick? And I saw it and there was an $857 medical bill that was on there. And they were like, do you recognize this? And I was like, yes, I actually do. I went in for an MRI. When I went in, they gave us the option of like, hey, if you pay this in cash right now, we'll give you half costs. No one will ever see the rest of this. And you know, because we're just worried about people not paying or whatever. Right.
And you know what that sounds like to me? It sounds like a numbers guy or a protection guy in the mob.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
It's like a guy shows up. He goes, you know what? You owe us $1,000 for being here. We'll take 500.
Yeah.
And you're too busy or whatever.
That's exactly what it's like.
Yeah.
You can always get a better deal or almost always get a better deal by paying cash. Everything is negotiable. The prices, everything is kind of created out of thin air anyway, from the patient's point of view. So,
right.
So keep going. Tell the rest of that story.
So that's what's crazy to me is I call and I said, look, I paid for this in cash. Do you have this receipt for it? And I said, yes. But then that doctor is no longer at that place. That hospital does not exist. It was bought out by somebody else. There is an endless chain of all of these people either leaving their practices or getting bought up by bigger corporations.
Right.
I think in this case, it was like Novant or something like that. There really is no record of any of this. And at the end of the day, I'm going to get boned and I'm going to have to pay it. Now,
right.
Because
there's no record, how do you as a private citizen go into some kind of hearing, right?
Yeah, right?
Some kind of arbitration to say, you know what? I didn't authorize, because what you said before about there not being estimates, every state in the United States has some kind of a labor restriction that requires mechanics and auto body repair, painters, all sorts of other people to give you an estimate mm-hmm. up front, right? And there are thresholds based on the severity of the issue or the cost of the product or whatever it is that they have to come back to you to get your permission to add more to that fucking deal, right?
Right.
That exists everywhere except for medicine.
Yes.
Well, so actually something does exist in our uniform commercial code. And this is where what I show people how to do in the book is analyze your medical bills to see if it's inaccurate or unfair. Like this bill for the MRI where you paid it in cash, that's just a flat out inaccurate bill. Like they should not be billing you for that at all. And now it shows up in your credit report, and that's a tough thing to untangle at that point.
Well, look, I pay it, and I'm going to pay it because simply to the time and energy that it takes to clear up something like that or try to trace down that guy or this company isn't worth it. And I think they do it on purpose because they know a lot of people like me are just going to pay it and move on with their fucking lives.
That's right.
Because they want it off the credit.
Right.
But the other part about it is what a lot of people are going through and what I went through in this situation was they had asked me to get the gown on because it was a brain scan. I'd put the gown on, everything. You're already vulnerable already. You've got to take that dye and everything else. It's cold. You're in an office. You're signing away. You're giving somebody cash. And then they're putting you into an MRI, which sounds like an EDM concert. And you're just like, dude, I don't know what I'm doing here. You leave. You hope everything's for the best. You kind of forget about it. And then it pops back up later. I have a feeling, though, this is happening to millions of Americans. Typically, I go scorched earth on companies and shit like this. But with something like this, I'm so used to this happening because we hear it from so many people that I don't even know how to fight this. And I'm assuming that's what your book details.
Yeah, I walk people through it, and you're hitting on a really important point. I mean, we're at our most vulnerable point, you know, when you've taken off your clothes and put on that paper gown, and then they're doing whatever they need to do with you. People are really sick. I mean, they're not in a position where they can fight back. But the first thing they need to do when you get that bill is make sure it's an itemized bill, because especially hospitals, they're accustomed to giving you a lump sum. You know, like pay, you know, X amount for medical services, X amount for pharmacy services. But if you go to like the grocery store or you go out to a restaurant or wherever you go, you get an itemized bill that lists out all the different charges that make up the total. And the first thing people need to do is get an itemized bill. It's your right to have one. And then check those items on the bill and make sure those are things that actually occurred. Because believe it or not, there are so many errors in medical bills. Experts who look at them for a living say that most medical bills contain some kind of an error in it. So you can often find things on the bill that are just not even things that happened or should not even be included. And then you can contest those bills. And then you also want to look for inflated prices. So another, you know, way that the healthcare system makes a lot of money and cheats us, frankly, it's profiteering based on our sickness. That's what's going on here. They overcharge you for something. So let's say you want to get the billing code. So there's a lexicon of codes that hospitals and doctors and others use to translate your medical records into the claims that they submit to insurance companies or the bills that they send to us. Those codes are also your right to have. If the hospital won't give them to you, you can get them through your insurance company. You can Google the codes. And I know this sounds like a lot of work, right? I hear this all the time. People are like, well, how are people going to do this? And I just kind of go, look, think back to the first time you got your checkbook, you know, when you're a teenager or a young adult and you're learning how to balance your checkbook. You had to learn some financial literacy skills. This is similar. Like, we have to figure out a little bit, some basics about the way the system works. Because if you get those billing codes and you Google them, you can see if they accurately describe the care you received, and you can do a price check. You can go on a website called fairhealthconsumer.org. And then you can look up the prices and you can see, is the price I received for my MRI a fair price compared to what others received in this area? That's, it basically is like the average of what insurance companies pay in your community.
Yeah.
You can check the prices, and then if they're inaccurate or if they're overpriced, then you can contest those bills. But you have to check every bill because people could be paying hundreds or even thousands of dollars more than they should with every healthcare interaction. I mean, the price variation is so extreme.
Oh, it's nuts. My buddy, real quick, to follow up on that, my buddy said, call another MRI place, and he goes, you'll be shocked at what the difference is in prices. And I was like, what do you mean? Why isn't it the same? So I did, just to do it, because he's a smart guy, and he told me to. It was an $800 difference between places that were 4 miles apart in this town that we were living in. I was like, holy shit.
Do you want to hear a fun anecdote on that? So Richard Ryan, one of our buddies, he's one of the owners of Black Rifle.
Yeah.
Full Mag. Mm-hmm. If you, the Vulcan cannon on the Prius thing.
Yeah.
He made all that happen. He's a fun guy. Pays cash for everything medical.
Yes.
Always.
Yeah.
Whether it's dental or medical. And this is something that he figured out probably by talking to somebody like you years ago. So here's a good example. MRI scans in Texas range somewhere between $1,500 for something small all the way up to $43,000. The range for cash prices is $250 to $700.
Yeah, that's what I paid.
If you pay cash for an MRI, there's no MRI you can get that costs more than $700.
$700 was mine, yeah.
I have a case study for you, too. I talked to a guy named Kevin Vincent in Amarillo, Texas. Mm-hmm. This guy needed two MRIs before he underwent a back operation.
Right.
The hospital told him it'd be $11,000 if he ran it through his insurance, but he had a high deductible. That's the amount you have to pay before your insurance kicks in. So he had a $10,000 deductible. They said it'd be $9,000 if he paid cash. He went to a company called Green Imaging, and people can go to greenimaging.net. What they do is they do direct contracting with independent imaging centers. So if you go to a hospital imaging center, they are going to screw you. They always charge way more. Studies have shown that this is the case over and over again. Independent imaging centers have way better prices. This guy went to Green Imaging. He got referred to an independent imaging center like half a mile from the hospital. He got both MRIs for about $900.
Oh,
so
wow.
He saved, just by going a half a mile away, he saved more than $8,000. Which is just incredible. The same level of care, same MRI. He got it. That included the price for the radiologist to read it, and he got a copy of the scans. It's incredible how this price variation, it's hidden. People don't expect it because, frankly, it's so unfair. And you wouldn't go one place for a Big Mac and go to another place for a Big Mac and pay 10 times as much.
Right. That's a ridiculous price.
We don't have that happen to us in other consumer interactions.
So I've got my brain immediately goes to three questions. One is that are laws being that exist currently being broken by the system? Like, is it just that it's so immense and so ubiquitous that nobody's doing anything about it, but it technically is illegal? Or does that not exist? And is there a consumer protection element? And then the third question is, I know that's a lot. The third question is, one, why, this is rhetorical, why do the insurance companies allow this shit to happen? Obviously, because they get their scrape. Mm-hmm. Right. But the other question is, doesn't that make them then as culpable as everybody else?
So your third question, the answer is yes. The insurance companies are middlemen who are taking a percentage of the total as their revenue and their profit. So for insurance companies, they make more money as the cost of healthcare goes up.
Right. So how are insurance companies not just like goons in the mob that are offering protection? Right.
I mean
that there, this is it's a fucking shakedown.
It seems like a high level mob, but whereas, you know, the guys in the fucking 20s and shit are sticking you up in the back of the alley. They're just doing it in plain sight.
This is white collar. It's out in the open. It's known by everyone, and it's just come to be accepted. And patients, you know, are stymied by the complexity of the system, by everything that's hidden. You know, it's hard to find what the costs are. It takes work to actually protect yourself. And then employers, unfortunately, have been very passive. So employers sponsor health plans for working Americans. About 155 million of us are in employer-sponsored health plans. And the employers, unfortunately, have only been passing this cost on to the employees. So if you look at the way deductibles and premiums have gone up over the last 10 to 20 years, they've skyrocketed. The only thing that's gone up faster and is sort of equivalent is the cost of higher education. So the cost of college and the cost of healthcare have both spiked while the, you know, inflation has been much lower and our wages, unfortunately, are also very low. And so these high costs are actually consuming our compensation. So our employers set aside money for our health benefits, for our wages, for our paid time off, retirement benefits, things like that. It all comes from the same pool of money that's funded by our employers. So as the healthcare system is sucking all of our compensation out of our compensation pool, employers don't have enough money left over to give us the raises that we should be getting. So this is also contributing to the wage stagnation that we're suffering as working Americans and that we've been suffering for decades.
Man,
in terms of what's being violated, there is in the Uniform Commercial Code, which is the law that protects consumers, there is an open price term that says if you're not given a price up front, it's assumed that the price you'll get for any commercial transaction is a reasonable price that's set in good faith. And so when I show people how to sue in small claims court, we do have a legal argument where if they didn't give you a price up front, it's assumed under the Uniform Commercial Code, under the open price term, that that's going to be a fair and reasonable price that's set in good faith. And what we're seeing over and over again, these are not fair and reasonable prices, and they're not set in good faith. It's just nobody has come to enforce that on behalf of consumers. And so consumers, unfortunately, are put in a position where they need to defend themselves. And they can do it because the law is on our side.
Well, this seems like the tobacco shit all over again, to be honest. It's nothing is actually going to happen until these conglomerate companies start getting class action lawsuits filed against them, right?
I think that that is the case. And I think things like that, you're going to start seeing employees suing their employers, because employers have a fiduciary responsibility to manage the compensation of their employees in a responsible way.
Right.
So you saw this in the retirement benefits field a few years ago, where employers were not being careful. They were paying these massive fees. And so people's retirement money was getting eaten up. You're going to start seeing, watch for it, lawsuits filed by employees against employers for violating their fiduciary duty to protect that employee's money. And that's really the situation that we're in right now, where it's become so egregious, it's become so out in the open that we're going to start seeing these lawsuits.
Well, first of all, our employees can hear this right now, so keep it down a little bit. just kidding. We pay for all of their stuff.
No, we pay for all their stuff, but we also got caught up in it too. Remember, we got that thing for a gap insurance bill?
Oh yeah,
one of our employees had Crohn's disease, and they were like, "Oh, you know, it'd be great for you to have this gap insurance thing," and it came from some other company.
And we never said yes. They just sent us a bill for it,
and it wasn't even attached to the company that we have insurance with. Yeah. It was somebody else.
Yeah, and a bigger company probably just would have been like, "Oh, okay," and
yeah,
paid money because you assume that the company sending you bills is probably not fucking with you, right?
Yeah.
But we were like, "No, we're not doing that." And they're like, "Oh, okay, sorry about it." Because it's every time you catch them, it's funny. Pay attention to this shit when you catch them. If any of you guys, when you go read the book and when you exercise some of these strategies, notice that the people on the other end of the phone calls where you're telling them to fuck off always apologize to you for the inconvenience. They know that they're fucking doing this stuff.
Yeah.
This is not like a tragic accident or anything. They are willfully preying on people. And I've said this many, many times on the show before, and this goes for the political parties as well. Telling someone that you can be as healthy as you can afford to be is immoral in the richest country in the history of the goddamn world. And we have plenty of money to pay for all of this stuff if we pay for it at a reasonable price.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I can't afford diamond studded Cheetos, but I can afford a family size bag of regular Cheetos.
Yeah.
Right.
Let me ask you this. Is there a country out in the world that is getting this right? Is getting health insurance right? If there was one model that health we could
insurance,
follow,
health
who
insurance
would it
be? Shouldn't even exist. Why the fuck would health insurance exist? Health care as a pool of money makes sense. Health insurance, these guys are grifters. They're fucking running a protection racket. Fuck these guys.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, rant.
No, it's fine.
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, I haven't done enough in-depth research to like declare one country has it right. But one thing you can see is that in general, they pay about half as much per person as we pay. And they get results that are much better in terms of life expectancy, the disease burden, and other types of things that are causing people, you know, suffering and harm. So in general, the United States ranks very low on quality of healthcare and quality outcomes, and we rank the highest on cost.
Boy, what do we do?
We do not have the best healthcare system in the world. We don't, unless you're rich and can pay for it. If you're rich and can pay for it, I would say we have the best healthcare in the world. But we don't have the best healthcare system for, 90% of the population? And especially people who have chronic conditions or who are lower, it's really middle income, because lower income can get on Medicaid in a lot of states. Right. But it's the middle income working Americans, kind of your, the median income in the United States is about $60,000 for a family of four. Those are the people. You put a $60,000 family with a high deductible plan of like $5,000 or more, they're effectively uninsured. I mean, a family that makes 60 grand can't afford to pay 5,000 extra. By the way, that's on top of their premiums.
Mm. Yep.
For their deductibles every year.
So what do we do as a nation? What's the solution or the answer?
So my answer that I advocate for in the book is that employers and employees need to snap to attention and then realize all the power that we have, because we are controlling the money here. They need our money like they need oxygen to breathe. And so we need to start realizing that. Stop trusting the system. Come on. Like, we got to wake up and realize, look at the data over the last 20 to 30 years. Every year, increased costs. Every year, less coverage for the money we're spending. Every year, higher out-of-pocket costs, higher premiums, higher deductibles. This is not happening by accident, and it's not justified. I mean, I spent an entire year, 2017, doing nothing but going on a quest to identify all the most outrageous ways we waste healthcare money in this country. They estimate that 25% to 33% of all healthcare spending is wasted. That's about $1 trillion a year. And it's wasted on things like overpriced care, unnecessary care, administrative bloat, the complex way we pay for claims. Like, we have hundreds of insurance companies. All of them have their own plans. Doctors and hospitals have to hire like one or two administrative staff per physician just to do billing because it's so complicated. That's wasting hundreds of billions of dollars a year. So if we just changed the way we pay for healthcare and stopped unnecessary treatment and all the other things that are wasting our money, everybody could be insured. The premiums and deductibles would be affordable. But that waste, that's revenue for the healthcare industry. So employers and employees need to wake up and realize if they put better plan design in place and advocate for themselves and stop just accepting what they get from United Healthcare, Blue Cross, Cigna, Aetna, Humana, they can reduce their healthcare spend by 30, 40, 50% and get better care than what they're getting right now. And that's what the story, the most important part of my story, of my book, the book is called Never Pay the First Bill and Other Ways to Fight the Healthcare System and Win. The and win part is really the most important part of my whole title, because I'm showing chapter by chapter. I have 8 chapters for individuals that show tactics about how individuals can win. And I have 3 chapters for employers that show how employers can win. And so I do think there is a free market, employer and employee-based, consumer-based solution here. We haven't started fighting yet. We've been passive. We've been getting screwed. We've been getting put into debt, bankrupted. Now it's time, I think, to rise up and say, look, you can't bully us like this anymore. And so those are the kind of how-to tactics that I put in the book, how to fight back and win.
It's good. I mean, it's really interesting just hearing a clinical explanation of what we know is happening day to day, because again, it just sounds like a loan shark.
Yeah.
Like, they know that you don't have the money up front to spend on this. So we can charge you a 3,000% markup, basically, is what's happening.
What's really sick about it is that that loan shark is exploiting your sickness for profit, right?
Yeah.
Well, not only your sickness, but your kids.
Your loved ones. We're so desperate for care that we will pay anything because we have to save the life of our loved ones, right? So that's also what makes it especially immoral and unethical, even if it is legal.
Well, look, there have been very few politicians over the last 25 years since this discussion on universal health care began in the mid-90s, right?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen any politician actually come out and make a career out of taking a stand against particularly big pharma, right, the pharmaceutical industry, because they give money to everybody.
Yeah.
The insurance companies give money to everybody. The hospital conglomerates give money to everybody. And
right.
Here we are.
Yeah, here we are. And if you look at it, look, I think obviously the biggest politician that has at least tried to do something was obviously Obama with Obamacare. Was that good or bad for our country at the time?
So the Affordable Care Act had a lot of really good things in it. Like, our health insurance system used to be so barbaric that if people had pre-existing conditions, they would just decline to insure them, right? So literally, people would be dying without any health insurance because of the fact that they had some chronic illness. That's barbaric. And thankfully that got taken care of with the Affordable Care Act. And other things in the Affordable Care Act are really positive, but one of the really negative things about the Affordable Care Act is that it didn't actually put things into place to rein in the cost. So it really ended up being the Unaffordable Care Act, because since the Affordable Care Act was put into place, the cost of care has spiked even more.
Right.
And so it had positives. I mean, it was a huge all-encompassing bill. I mean, it was a massive piece of legislation that really did a lot. And so I don't think it's, you know, you can't say it was all good or all bad. That's just too simplistic. But it definitely caused the cost of care to increase.
Right. And yeah. I've been saying this since, it was passed in 2011. So since 2011, that is nothing more than a handout to insurance companies. Right. I mean, look, there are some good things in there about pre-existing conditions and stuff like that. But a lot of the other teeth that the bill had, like religious exemptions and shit like that. Come on, man. Yeah. You get to not give one of your employees the quality of care they might otherwise get because of how you believe the universe began.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of here. that's ridiculous.
Yeah, you're beyond a scientific approach at that point.
Yeah.
You're leaning on something else, which is faith, I guess. I remember when Obamacare started, I was in Los Angeles. I had the same doctor for right around 12 years. Great guy. It got to the point, though, where he said, look, I'm going to have to start charging patients a yearly fee just to see me in order to keep up with the costs on the back end for us doctors who are running private care. Why is that? His fee was high, and I was like, no, I'm not doing that. I go to the doctor once a year, twice a year tops. What happened with the doctors, and what's the incentive? If you're a kid going to school to be a doctor and have your own private practice, what's the incentive of that in today's
Doctors are victims of this system too. Mm. And they will tell you that they have to deal with the nonsense with these insurance companies. Did you know some insurance companies have a rejection rate on claims of higher than 30%? In other words, more than 30% of the bills that get sent to them by hospitals and doctors get bounced back and rejected. And then they have to resubmit them. I mean, the amount of administrative hassle just for a doctor to get paid these days by an insurance company is just nonsense. And then they also have to get a lot of things pre-approved by insurance companies. So, you know, they're having to hassle. Doctors are spending hours every week dealing with insurance company pre-approvals. And many times these are doctors that have no suspicious record of practice pattern that shows that they need to have everything pre-approved. They don't green light any doctors and say, oh yeah, you're good. We've seen that you're responsible with the way you prescribe things or the way you treat patients. So we're not going to make you jump through all the hoops. So some doctors have chosen to just back out of the system and say, I'm going to become a cash pay direct contracted doctor where people can more like concierge medicine, mm-hmm. where an employer or an employee can pay me a monthly rate of cash up front. And then I'm backing out. I'm not going to deal with the insurance system anymore. Or they decide I'm not going to take Medicaid, or I'm not going to take a certain type of insurance payer. You know, there have been some schemes by doctor groups to also then stop taking in-network insurance care and then bill out-of-network. That's what's leading to all these surprise medical bills that you hear about, where they don't have a contracted rate with the insurer, but so they just bill an exorbitant rate as an out-of-network provider. And then if the insurance company doesn't pay them enough, they send what's called the balance bill or the surprise bill to the patient.
Right.
That's another leading cause of medical debt, especially for people who go to emergency rooms.
Yep.
They get hit with these surprise bills. And there is some legislation now that's coming into effect that's hopefully going to address that. But this type of deceptive and predatory practice, these schemes are mainstream in the healthcare system. So they'll tamp down the surprise bills, I think, with this legislation. But there's all these other schemes. There's spread pricing. There's rebates in pharmacy. There's all these games that are deceptive that the industry creates to take more of our money from us than it should.
That's funny. That's how most large institutions become through one way. It's either government incompetence or corporatism. Mm-hmm. It's one or the other, right? It always is one or the other. Like in the university system, you know the reason that out-of-state tuition is more is because the university feels like that kid's family didn't pay taxes into the state, so they should have to pay more to come to the school, right?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah, that's fucking stupid.
Yeah.
Because the money doesn't go back into a pool for the state. It goes to the school themselves. So the presumption is that kid's family would have paid three times more than the annual tuition of a fucking state university in taxes over the course of that time. That's come on, man.
It's crazy.
That is the biggest bunch of nonsense I've ever heard in my life.
But that's also why I feel like this system is ripe for disruption, right? So I'm coming out of the newspaper industry, right? When I started in journalism in 2001, the internet wasn't mainstream enough. And so newspapers in the 80s and 90s were basically printing money. They were making so much money, they thought they were invincible. Mm-hmm. In fact, I have an editor who used to work at the LA Times. There, I had the editor. He's retired now. But he said when he started at the LA Times in the 1970s, I think it was, they were just raking in money. And he turned in his first expense report. He said he got scolded by his editor because they told him, LA Times reporters only fly first class. he got scolded because he didn't fly first class while he was on a reporting trip. And so when I started in 2001, they were still in this print media world, right? Where the internet was just starting. A lot of newspapers and media outlets were like, why do we even have to have a website? We have a print product that goes to everyone's homes. We have all these subscribers. They thought they were invincible.
Yeah.
In fact, they used to make fun of the journalists who just did stuff online because it was lesser than having something in print. You know, you want that story above the fold on the front page.
Right.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
And now most of those newspapers have shut down. I mean, we've seen what's happened. The internet has come in. It's been a disruptive force. It's been a democratization of the media, where any individual can start their own website, start their own podcast, build their own audience. And it's actually totally changed the landscape. And that's what we're seeing happen in healthcare right now. The early adopters are getting on board with really disruptive strategies. They're taking advantage of all this wasted spending. They're finding ways for employers and individuals to save a ton of money. And that's the kind of stuff I show in the book. But it's in the early phases right now. And so the question is, will this industry be disrupted? My prediction is yes, because better ideas come along and people are hurting so bad, they're looking for better solutions. And I think they're more open than ever to trying something new.
Marshall, we got some sponsors who pay for this shit wagon to be on the air. First and foremost is ghostbed.com/drinkingbros. That flash sale is up, kids. 40% off. Head over there. We guilted them into it. Their IT department left their 4th of July sale up. Not our problem, but once people skedaddled over there, they were like, shit, it's not there anymore. Well, we guilted them into a flash sale, so take advantage of it. Pillows, sheets, mattresses, adjustable bases, you name it, they have it. They are the very best in the business. My God, man, if you're in Texas right now, get the cooling mattress. Shit, it's been hot. I really felt it yesterday. I don't care how many goddamn fans they put on you outside in a fucking restaurant. You're still sweating your ass off. Couldn't wait to get home to sleep in that cooling mattress. The pillows are also cooling as well. And so is that brand new pillow topper that I highly, highly recommend. Go to ghostbed.com/drinkingbros today and pick out a mattress set that is right for you. As always, they got a zero down, zero interest program, as long as you have decent credits. And once you got it locked in, there's a calculator on the side that tells you how much you're paying for it there. And you can adjust or add accordingly if you want. Go to ghostbed.com/drinkingbros today and hop on them deals. Next up, D'Anthony, we got liquidiv.com. My God.
I've got one in my
car. I've got a bag in my car. I've got one in my backpack. I had my neighbors hit me up yesterday because they got back. They were hungover from a concert in Dallas.
Yeah.
And they were like, hey, dude, do you have any on you? And I was like, yeah, I do.
Yeah, I got that when we were in Vegas.
Yeah.
So I was like, hey, you don't happen to have one of those liquid IVs, do you? And I'm like, yeah, I've got one. You know who else does? It's liquidiv.com/drinkingbros, bitch.
Yeah. You know what? It's just a promo code for those guys.
Oh, it is a promo code, yeah. But it's 25%. So you can buy them on Amazon. You can buy them in Costco, but you're not going to get 25% off.
No, dude, you're not going to get 25% off.
Come on.
Just go to liquidiv.com, promo code drinkingbros. We'll get you 25% off anything in the entire store, by the way. And they have endless flavors now. So in the last week, I have had apple pie.
Apple pie is really good. I drink apple pie. That's the one I have at night.
Yeah. That's the one I got right now.
I have
now
the strawberry one in the morning and the apple pie one at night.
So you got strawberry now. You got, dude, the watermelon is my latest and greatest. Watermelon and pear are now tied for the top two. I was a fucking old school like Asahi and then lemon lime guy. And then the watermelon came through and the pear. Those are my two favorites. Look, there's so many flavors to choose from. You can have a fucking field day with it. But they've got vitamins, you know, five essential vitamins, vitamin C, everything else. There's a reason why everybody's drinking these goddamn things. Also, you know, during the COVID and everything else, I know these guys were donating a lot. It was like 11 million sticks they'd given to people. It's just a pack of powder, dude. And you dump it in water, you're good to go. 12 to 16 ounces of water, and it double hydrates you like immediately.
It's got the cellular transport technology. So all it is for it, that this isn't some like unnecessary marketing phrase like a hearty breakfast. Like that doesn't mean shit, right? Yeah. This is an actual process by which water bonds to your bloodstream more efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
And it's legit science. It's how it works.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's a weird thing to say, oh, you'll get double hydrated. What the fuck does that mean? You know what I mean?
It's the best way to describe it. It modifies
the H2O receptors in your bloodstream, basically. Mm-hmm. So you or modifies the water actually to fit the receptors in your bloodstream better. That's it.
That's it.
It's really that simple.
It is, man. And everybody loves these things. Everywhere we go, we get asked for them.
They sent a bunch overseas too, by the way. During that whole, it wasn't just.
Oh, really?
They've been giving shit away for a long time. It wasn't just during the COVID thing. It was before. They would send shit over to deployed dudes.
Mm.
So, I mean, this has been going on for a while.
Huge fan of these guys. Grab your Liquid IV in bulk at nationwide Costco stores, or get 25% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use the promo code DRINKINBROS at checkout. It'll just ship it right to your house. It's 25% off anything you order when you get better hydration today using the promo code DRINKINBROS at liquidiv.com. Last but not least, D'Anthony, we got GetRoman.com/DrinkingBros where you're going to get $15 off your first month. Look, we've had Roman on the show for years and years at this point. It's fixing up anything you got going on downstairs. Something's off in the bedroom. You might want to think about it. Go to GetRoman.com/DrinkingBros. This is for ED with Roman. You can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. A U.S. licensed healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, ships to you for free with two-day shipping. The process is straightforward and discreet. The packaging is just a little blue package. No one will know what it is, including the misses. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/DrinkingBros, complete an online visit. Take care of your ED without leaving your own home. Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/DrinkingBros now. You'll get $15 off your first month. It's really time you take care of your ED. And remember, getting started today allows you to save $15 on your first order of ED treatments. Not kidding. Not kidding there. Go to GetRoman.com/DrinkingBros now. I agree with you because Dan and I see private doctors as well, and for different health, what would you call it? Wellness, I guess, for lack of a better word. And I've seen more success with that, where I'm able to sit down with somebody, pay them cash, rather than the long term of trying to go to a family physician, trying to figure out what's wrong as they send you to 80 different things, and then you're getting weird bills and all the other stuff. So I do believe it is possible. A friend of ours who's always on the show, Dr. Frank, in the Frank Institute, can now treat you for a bunch of different things rather than just a couple different things. And I think you're going to see an expansion of that and individuals with practices becoming bigger saying, all right, great. I would rather give this guy cash in his office, sit down with him, rather than go to, you know, your classic family physician with the snake wrapped around the bone outside or whatever that is, and then not know where the money's going or what kind of bills I'm going to get. So I'm on board with you here. The drug thing, though, is what I'm confused about. What do we do for that? Like, what do we do as far as getting the actual medicine once we are diagnosed, and the cost of that? Because you see, like, the pharma bro with, like, Shkreli.
Shkreli, yeah.
Yeah. jacking up the AIDS pills for $1,500 a piece. How do you stop big pharma? Let's say you do get the doctors to come on board with this and start a revolution. How do you get big pharma in line with those guys?
Well, we're seeing workarounds happening already where some pharmacies are creating like membership programs. So I mentioned in the book, Good Shepherd Pharmacy, which is based in Memphis. They have a mail order program where it's $5 a month for most generic drugs, okay? The dirty secret about medication, especially generic medication, is that it's often a lot less than that $10 copay that your insurance company tells you to pay for generics. So like you sign up for a health plan and they say, oh, generics are $10 under our prescription plan. And you're like, great, 10 bucks, that's a good deal. Yeah. That might have only cost a dollar for that generic medication. They don't give you the savings. They still, that's their spread. That's still the money that they take. That's profit for them. So Good Shepherd Pharmacy has a prescription drug plan for $5 a month. And other pharmacies also have similar plans. So people should look for that. And then here's a really crazy thing. There are now, for specialty drugs, like the really expensive ones, there are companies that are set up so that people can import specialty drugs from Canada, the UK, New Zealand, Australia, the same drugs, same drug company, same drug formula, same drug brand. Now it's cheaper to import them from overseas to the United States than it is to buy them in the United States. And you see this with people who live like on the border of mm-hmm. Canada or Mexico. Mm-hmm. They're going across the border now and they're getting their drugs because there are so many markups and middlemen in the drug system in the United States that we're getting so cheated that people are now actually going to Canada and Mexico and importing drugs from other English-speaking countries to get a better deal. And so these kind of workarounds are starting. They're becoming better known. People are adopting them. And I think as more people adopt these things, they're going to leave the old way behind. They're going to say, I don't want my United Healthcare plan with Optum as my pharmacy benefit manager because they are taking advantage of me. They're charging me more than they should. That's boosting their profit and it's hurting me financially. So I think that as people wise up, as people become advocates for themselves, they're going to find solutions that are out there. It's just that the solutions are out there. It sounds so crazy that you almost can't even believe it. Like, why in our developed nation would, where we have been rumored to have the best healthcare system in the world, that's been the reputation. Mm-hmm. Why would Americans need to go to Mexico or Canada to get a better deal on the same drugs that they could get in the United States?
Right. And that you're putting yourself at risk for what it actually is. And if yeah. it's laced with something or, you know.
Well, I know you're buying from drug companies.
It's the same drug, same packaging, same manufacturer. It's not a different drug. I mean, that's the crazy thing, especially the stuff that you get when you go to Canada, the United Kingdom, New Zealand, Australia. It is literally the same drug at a much lower price.
Got it. Yeah, because, you know, in the case of like Dr. Frank, for example, we were talking about a second ago, when I go to see him, there's an exact price I pay in cash. I don't believe he takes yep. insurance.
No.
So it's like, hey, dude, here's what you're getting. Here's what you're paying. And that's it. You pay for it if you like. There's no insurance and everything else. I would love to see more people switch to that. I'd like to pivot for a minute, if you don't mind. 80% of our listeners are military and first responder. What can we do about the VA? Is there anything? Because I'm sure you've heard the horror stories.
That's a lot to lay at somebody's feet.
Well, there. I don't know if you've studied it. Because look,
I haven't. I can't speak to the VA. I mean, I really focused this book and most of my reporting on the employer sponsored world that's not the government plans. So I don't have a lot of insight on the VA.
Got it. Yeah, I didn't know if you, because look, we've got a million of these stories across the board, right? The VA in particular, Jesus Christ, when we get hammered with those questions.
Yeah.
And that's a whole different thing. That's part of the government?
Yeah.
So there's nothing you can do about that.
Well, there's definitely.
Yeah, so all I can say with any of these things is it's a really unfair system for anybody to be stuck in as a patient. I especially feel for people who have chronic conditions or who are dealing with injuries where they actually need regular ongoing care. But the basic gist of it is we have to keep protecting ourselves and persisting and demanding a fair deal because they're not going to give it to us, you know, unless we fight for it. And so we do have to push back. Sometimes it's really hard, but I don't want to make it sound like it's always hard. Like You know, sometimes you can call your insurance company and see that a bill just didn't get processed correctly. They can rerun the bill and you can save hundreds of dollars in about 5 minutes just because you checked it. Other times, you know, avoiding unnecessary care is a really important thing to do. About 25% of all the care that's provided is unnecessary. If you know that in advance and know some basic questions to ask your doctor or nurse practitioner when they're recommending something discretionary, you know, like a, you know, we think you should maybe get this test, or we think maybe we should do this procedure, or we think maybe you should take this drug. I recommend my number one question people should ask is, what happens if I wait? If I wait right now, instead of assuming I'm going to do this,
right,
let's assume that I'm not going to do it. Then what happens? Am I going to die when I walk out of here? Is there going to be a tumor that grows and takes over my body and kills me in a month? Or could we wait and see and maybe try some alternative approaches, maybe something less invasive or less expensive, maybe get a second opinion? Because too often we just take the advice they give us. They say, well, let's try this. And we don't really know. A lot of times it's guesswork. You know, medicine is more art than science sometimes. They might not need that scan, or maybe they could do a less expensive type of scan. And so we have to start, not that we want to ignore our doctors, but we have to do some independent research, check things out, look at the way they're paid. They're incentivized to treat us. They're often incentivized to do surgery. So if I was being, I kind of joked about our fee-for-service system. If I was paid by the word to write never pay the first bill, let's say they paid me a dollar a word, I would write you a million word book. I can promise you the readers would be overtreated, because doctors are human too. And when they're paid for what they do, they're incentivized to do more stuff, whether you need it or not. And then you might get injured, or and you're definitely going to pay the bill for that. So right. Make sure you don't get unnecessary care.
So for somebody like you, do you have a family? You married with kids?
Yeah, or? I do. I have three teenage boys. I've got a almost 20-year-old, an 18-year-old, and a 16-year-old.
So somebody like you, because you know so much about health insurance, what do you have? Like, what do you recommend to people?
So this is also different for everybody. I'm on an employer-sponsored plan. So for me, it works out the best to do that. But I've talked to lots of friends who are doing some of these health sharing plans.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard a lot of people are very skeptical of them. I've checked these plans out, and I'm not endorsing all of them, okay? So don't just go sign up for some fraudulent health sharing ministry or something that claims that they're going to cover everything. But you can check their references. And a lot of people are very satisfied with these health sharing plans. It is not insurance. Okay. So it's not insurance. Don't think they're going to tell you it's not insurance. It's not regulated like insurance. So this is definitely a buyer beware situation. But I've talked to people who are very satisfied on these plans. And I tell you what, they are way less expensive. They may not cover everything, but they might cover the things that you need. And this is also where every family is in such a different situation. So you can't just say blanket across the board, this is great for everyone. I would say the health sharing plans are better for people who are more healthy, and you have to have a little money up front to pay the bill up front, and then you get it reimbursed through the health sharing plan. But look into some of those. Another tip I have got to share with your listeners here and viewers, look at hospital financial assistance policies. These hospitals are nonprofits. They're required by the IRS to offer financial assistance to people who qualify for it. Often, many people qualify for it. Middle-class people might be able to have their bill completely forgiven if they push for financial assistance under the hospital's financial assistance policy. They're required to put these policies on their website. They might even have a phone number on the back of your bill that you can call and ask about. This isn't charity that patients don't deserve. They are getting a tax benefit in exchange for providing this charity care. So don't be too proud to ask for it or pursue it. I have talked to people who have had thousands of dollars wiped clean just because they qualify. And sometimes you can qualify for a big discount even if you make a lot of money. Like, I've looked at some of these policies. Even people who make into the six figures can get a massive discount on their hospital bills. And it depends on, you know, they make you prove your income. They make you show if you have other bills, maybe that you're in debt to or have to pay. But many people can qualify, and you can check out an organization that helps people called Dollar Four. It's D-O-L-L-A-R for.org. This is a nonprofit that's been set up just to help people apply for financial assistance in hospitals. And I love what they're doing. They have an amazing mission and they're getting bills wiped clean for people. It's really incredible.
But at some point, this system has got to be attacked, for lack of a better phrase. And things that have power and influence and make money very rarely go away, right? With subtle or indirect attacks. They like this, the tobacco industry is still going after losing billions of dollars. I mean, even in the pharmaceutical industry, the company that made OxyContin got hammered, I think it was 2019, $8 billion fine, but all they did was reopen under a different name and they're still producing the same drug.
Yeah, there. What was it, $1.7 billion just New York alone for Oxys, I believe.
And I think a total of a $9 billion fine. Mm-hmm. And they just continue going because it's that profitable, right? I mean, it's that scene from Fight Club where Edward Norton is explaining to the woman the algorithm on how they determine whether to issue a recall on a car. Like if only, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 people get murdered, fuck them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
As long as the number doesn't reach, if the amount to initiate the recall is more than the amount they would have to pay in the average lawsuit, we'll just pay the lawsuits.
Yeah.
I think I agree with you that we have to fight back. And that's why I wrote Never Pay the First Bill. But I think the issue is who's incentivized to fight on our behalf. I can't find who it is. Really, there's no one. Like the healthcare industry is not going to start taking less money. Yeah. The politicians, as you have pointed out, are funded by the industry. Mm. So the industry is writing the legislation. They're not finding ways to be disruptive to the industry.
No, people think that the Koch brothers were bad with their model anti-union legislation. They are peons compared to the pharmaceutical industry and what they've done in this country.
Yeah.
And the insurance industry and the hospitals, all of them have huge influence on our elected officials at the state level and at the federal level. And so really who's incentivized? We are, the people are. And that's why I really press in the book. We have, let's say, about 180 million people in this category of working Americans who are getting screwed. Now, I know a lot of people are either they're too sick, or they're not very sophisticated, or they're working three jobs. A lot of people are not going to be able to fight back. But let's just say this is you think of this like a David and Goliath battle, right? You're like one consumer against the system, right? Mm-hmm. Well, actually, we have 180 million Davids fighting these giants, okay? Let's say half of us push back. Let's say 1% of us push back. That's about 2 million Americans. We're going to demand itemized bills, demand prices up front, sue them in small claims court when they bill us unfairly or inaccurately. We would overwhelm them if 1% of us started to push back. Let's say 1% of us called our HR department and our CFO of our company and said, hey, what are you doing to protect my compensation that's being devoted to healthcare benefits?
Right. Yeah, because that would put
the pressure on the employers to start asserting themselves. So I do think we have a lot of leverage here. It is a fight. And my book shows people how they and their employers can fight back and win.
That that pool of customers out of the 180 million insured, 150 million, as you said, are through their employees. So that probably is the biggest fist we can swing in this particular fight.
I think so. And here's the thing. It's good. There are going to be winners and losers. Okay. So this is the other thing. When you see the industry suggest their value-based payment proposals and all this kind of stuff that comes through the legislation, it's never disruptive in the sense that it needs to be disruptive. If we're wasting a fourth of all the money that's spent on healthcare, then you know what that means? We don't need to pay that anymore.
Right. Yeah.
None of us could run our family or our business budget in a way that 25% of everything that we spend is wasted. So it's not justifiable at all. There will be winners and losers. Right now, the consumers and the employers and the working Americans have been the losers. The industry needs to start taking some L's here. Like they've been winning and felt very entitled to our money. It's not an entitlement thing for us to support the shareholders of the massive insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies. They need to justify, they need to give us value, just like every other, like we get from our other consumer enterprises. And so we need to fight back and we need to win. It just has to happen.
How bad is this going to get regarding COVID and bills for all of this? I look, my wife had to go when we were shooting in Los Angeles. They wouldn't treat her. Got a $1,200 bill later. They said, hey, just pay $100 in cash on the phone and things like that.
Interesting.
The morning show, the popular Apple TV show with Reese Witherspoon and Jennifer Aniston, they sued their insurer, Chubb, for $44 million for withholding COVID coverage for their production.
Wow.
How big is this going to get in the long run?
It's hard to know because so much of our taxpayer money has been poured into the system from COVID. I mean, we've had more than $5 trillion in relief spending paid out due to COVID. So a lot of taxpayer money is subsidizing the system. So that's on one hand why I would say it's already been bad for taxpayers because so much money has been spent. But on the flip side, I never want to underestimate the unethical shenanigans that will be tried by the system. And so I do anticipate, like you said, we're going to start seeing a lot of backtracking, clawing back of money that's been paid, bills being sent to consumers. I mean, my family got billed for COVID tests. They demanded copays from us before they would test us. And what are you supposed to do? You need a COVID test, right?
Yeah.
Well, they're telling you to pay your $20 copay. And you say, well, look, I'm not supposed to pay a copay on this because it's a COVID test. They didn't give us that option. So it's definitely going to be happening. It's already happened. I think COVID bills are going to create a lot of problems for people.
Yeah, because we've been hearing that story a lot. And there's so much confusion around it. I thought this was free. I thought the government was paying for this. No, we don't do that at this place, but you can go down to the other place and do it. This is going to be going on for years and years and years, especially because we don't have a clear-cut 100% effective vaccine yet. That, boy, that's going to be a whole nother fucking mess to untangle here. If you had one piece of advice for the audience, what would be the most beneficial thing you would say for a new family or a new employee somewhere to look for in an insurance plan?
Well, I would first say it's a principle. And the principle is this: the industry would like you to think that there's nothing you can do about this. That is a myth that's been created by the industry to make us feel like we're powerless and make us feel like we can't do anything. So first, the principle is we all can fight back and win. Okay, so the second thing I would say in terms of a practical principle, it goes right to the title of my book. Never pay the first bill until you have verified it to make sure it's accurate and check the prices to make sure that they are not screwing you financially, because that is happening almost every day all throughout our country. Well, it is happening every day throughout our country. That's the norm. And so if people just fought back when they saw that they were being inaccurately or overbilled, they would save themselves hundreds or even thousands of dollars per healthcare encounter. And so that's what I'm encouraging people to do. Never pay the first bill until you've checked it. Check it out. The book really, it's a how-to book. So the book really does walk you through how to do all this.
Great. Now's the point in the show. We get to the drinking bro of the week, which is someone who has inspired you or helped you become the person you are today. Who would you like to give the drinking bro of the week to?
Wow, drinking bro of the week. I'm going to give it to my mom, okay? So yeah. This is kind of funny. But I have a story in the book about when I was 16 years old, I got screwed by an employer who shut down the business I was working at. It was a dinner theater, because he said they didn't have enough money to pay us anymore. And what we all knew, we were teenagers, and we had this same employer had opened another dinner theater across town. I grew up in Golden, Colorado, and the dinner theater was in across Denver, right? So we were young, but we weren't dumb. We were like, wait a minute, how is it that you can operate this other business, but you can't afford to pay us? And everyone, we were all mad about it. Some of the teens went and picketed outside the guy's dinner theater. my mom was like, you should sue him. And I was like, sue him? What do you mean? I can barely drive. How am I going to sue this guy? She told me about small claims court. I went down to the courthouse. I filled out the paperwork. I paid like 10 bucks. It's very cheap. Even today, it's like $30 or $40 to sue in small claims court.
Yep.
I go into the courthouse, and on the day of the appointed hearing, and there is the owner of the company sitting there with his attorney. it's like a conference room. So the administrative judge just reads over my case that I had just written it out. I'd written what happened. And the judge goes, hey, he looks at the owner. He goes, hey, is this true what this kid is saying? And the owner goes, well, yeah. And the judge goes, you need to pay this kid his money. He didn't even bang a gavel right there, though. The owner of the company wrote me a check for like $300. I'm telling you, it was like the most empowering thing that I had harnessed the power of our judicial system to summon the man himself and his attorney. And they had to do my bidding because what they were doing was unfair to me as their employee. And it was extremely empowering. And that's also why I'm showing people how to use small claims court to defend yourself. It is your constitutional right to defend yourself this way against a predatory corporation or individual. And then, and this is just one of the beauties of our country that I love, that we have this system. So a powerless person can stand up to someone way stronger. It's really amazing. So I'm giving that to my mom. That award goes to my mom. For giving me that idea.
That's awesome. That's good, yeah. More importantly, was it dinner? Like, was it a murder mystery at that dinner theater?
No, it was like a vaudeville kind of show. Like, it was a great comedy vaudeville show. And I was the meat carver. So I stood at the end of the buffet line.
Yeah.
We had this giant roast beef. They called it the Baron of Beef. It was crusted in herbs, glistening with juices. And I would serve one slice for the customer. And then I had a plate under the buffet line where I would like serve myself one, you know, like one for them, one for me,
sure.
One for them, one for me. And then at the end of the night, I would have this massive pile of roast beef with this horseradish sauce. It was amazing. And I still, have very fond memories of that job.
Yeah, no, Baron of Roast Beef. Dan used to date somebody like that named in high school. So
yeah.
She's in the hospital now, paying a lot of medical bills.
Yeah.
Well. Tell everybody where they can find you and get the book. Right now, it's currently number 2. In the world in family practice medicine, and number 8 in health policy on Amazon. Besides Amazon, is it bookstores everywhere, the whole thing?
No, it's everywhere. It's at Barnes & Noble. It's discounted greatly on Amazon, so you can get it there. If people want bulk buys or want to know more about me, you can find me at marshallallen.com. Sign up for my newsletter. The other thing I want to mention, we're developing a series of videos, health literacy videos that are based on the principles in the book.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to be rolling those out in the coming months, doing a crowdfunding campaign to fund them and then rolling those out. My mission, my goal is to roll this information out to every working American so that people can be equipped and empowered to fight back against these unfair healthcare costs.
Well, look, I think it's amazing what you're doing. We're grateful to have you on today. We appreciate your time. And again, this is something that we've gotten thousands of messages about over the years. We thought it would be important to have somebody like you on. Thank you for your time this afternoon. For D'Anthony Holloway, I am Ross Patterson. The book is Never Pay the First Bill and is available everywhere by Marshall Allen. Good night, everyone.